Hi, everyone. Welcome back to This Week in Media. This is Alex. Daisy is not with us today. She is here. She's somewhere around. We're here at NAB in Las Vegas. But we felt like she was really busy and felt like we could hold our own. And we thought, 3D is a big thing. So we're going to make this a 3D show. And I have the perfect people to have this conversation with. First, we have Diana Wining. Hey, Diana.
Hi, how are you?
You're going to have to get closer to that mic because it's...
Hi, Alex.
There we go. That's perfect. And of course, now, Diana, everyone knows that you've been doing a lot of writing. You were doing a book signing, right?
That's right. Just came from a book signing at the NAB store.
Which book?
The Final Cut Pro 7, the certified course book that's taught in the Apple Authorized Training Centers.
Oh, excellent. And so Diana and I have been talking. We've been scheming to start a new podcast about... 3D production and so on and so forth. And it's actually then how I met Eric. So Eric Edmes did I say that right?
Oh, Edmeads.
Edmeads. I just know him as Eric. So the thing is, we talk all the time, and then I realized right before the show, I was like, I haven't really said his last name.
My ancestors burdened me with far too many vowels.
So Eric is the owner of Kerner Optical.
That's right.
And I'm sure that everyone knows, for the three of you that don't know what Kerner Optical is, Kerner Optical, of course, is what used to be it is the physical part of what was ILM at.
That's right.
It used to be called Kerner. When ILM moved in, it used to be called Kerner Optical, and they never changed the name so people wouldn't bother them.
Actually, as I've now heard it, it was not only that, they selected the name. They're on Kerner Boulevard, and they said, we need a different name, and George went with Kerner Optical to keep the people from rooting through the...
I thought that was something that already existed there.
Yeah,
you know better than I do.
That's what I had always thought as well, but I was talking to Marty and a couple of the longtime guys, and they said, no, that's actually not what it was. It was something that was decided and changed, yeah.
And so in the industry, you always know that, everyone says, well, where do you work? We'd always say, well, just why don't you come meet me at Kerner?
Yeah, and all the shipments came to Kerner. So people were delivering stuff to the home of Star Wars and Empire in Indiana, and they had no idea where they were. Even the neighbors around apparently didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. But evidently there was always the guys that were wandering around rummaging through our garbage. They figured it. Well, it was the explosions in the backyard.
That does give it away.
Tip off.
Yeah. Every once in a while there's an explosion that sets off all the car alarms, and then we decide, well, they must be not, something bad's happening back there.
Martha, an X-Wing fighter just blew up in that lot. I wonder what they do there.
I wonder what they mean by there's loud bang and windward stage. I wonder what that means. So,
I wonder if they sell glasses at the optical place.
Yeah. So what's happened is that one of the businesses that Kerner's gotten into, of course, is 3D. It's been something you guys have been working on for a couple of years.
Well, yeah, 3 years or so. But it dates back further than that because, of course...
Right.
The guys have not just been doing special effects, but when you need a special camera or a special rig to capture a particular shot, that's what they've done. The Empire camera was built for purpose at the Kerner Studios,
right.
For Empire Strikes Back to capture particular types of shots. And that has continued to happen over the last 30 years, motion control rigs and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of that history and background that goes into our stereoscopic rigs.
Yeah, and that's the advantage of having arguably the best model shop in the world is that you can build anything that you can think of.
Yes, it's they haven't quite got the time machine down yet, but they did build the original DeLorean, but it didn't actually time travel yet.
So now Diana, you have been in immersed.
Yes.
In 3D. Now you've been studying up as we go because you and I have been talking, and so you've been picking up a lot of information, talking to a lot of folks in LA.
Right.
But then you spent the last weekend this weekend before NAB, there was a 3D summit, right?
Right. SMPTE put on a digital cinema summit, and this year was totally dedicated to 3D. And lots of great speakers, good information, covered a really comprehensive list of topics around 3D. So, it starts to make your head swim at the end of the day, but that's where everybody is out there. They're, learning this new language, and they're absorbing it.
Well, you don't realize how complicated it's going to be when you – I mean, in some ways it's easy, but in other ways it's complicated. It's funny. Like, I go, oh, yeah, you can shoot in 3D. And then we were doing a podcast. We're doing a podcast on rotoscoping that we just did some recording on with someone who worked a lot on Alice in Wonderland, and then he started talking about rotoscoping in 3D, and I was like, oh, right.
And it's not just two times. You think, okay, two cameras. It's not just two times the work. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more. I mean, somebody used the figure. It's 100 times more work. But, you know, it's a lot of extra work.
Well, because, you know, keeping all that tracked and mm-hmm. together and everything else. And mm-hmm. people have been trying. I mean, one of the things that has been coming up at NAB that we've heard a lot about is was it Jeffrey Katzenberg who really came down on everybody in the last couple of days?
Oh,
well, and even Cameron in the weeks leading up to it, you know, they're really coming down on the quick rush to market on Clash and so on.
Right.
And there was a great quote that somebody mentioned in this 3D summit that said from Jeffrey Katzenberger, who said that if we take the low road in 3D instead of the high road and do these quick rushes to market, he thinks that within 12 months we'll be out of the 3D business. So I thought that was
you know,
a really
it's funny. I just was talking to somebody about that on the stand on one of the stands today. I said, I think if you're going to go out and do a rush conversion, they should call it virtual 3D or 3DV or something else, so that the average viewer, when they go in there, doesn't make a judgment about 3D based on that particular.
That's a great
film.
Idea.
And maybe there needs to be a badge.
Yeah,
you know like a THX or a Dolby Theater or something like true 3D. Mm-hmm. You know,
and
like,
the trouble is with that is of course with Dolby or THX, they had their piece that they were operating with. The trouble now is, of course, you've got the capture and the delivery. So now somebody's going to Real D, and they've done a great job, and Dolby as well. They've got their projection systems, and they've branded that very well. So you know, some people have a preference for going to a Real D cinema. Some might have a preference for going to a THX cinema. But that does not speak for the capture. And that now gets to be, I think, important. And there's obviously the massive difference between capture and conversion.
Great point. And, you know, the audience, even kids, will be critics. They'll go, a 7-year-old could come out of a movie that was converted and speak to how not good it was.
My daughter has been sold on 3D. Uh-huh. So she's 15. And and we went to see Clash of the Titans over the last weekend or last mm-hmm. week. And that was her comment was, I mean, I said, do we go see it in 2D or do we go see it in 3D? And she said, oh, we got to see it in 3D. You know, she just seen a couple things and she just loved it. And so she went to see it in 3D. And when we walked out, she goes, I don't even know why they bothered. Like, it was just
great.
Like, we just had to wear these glasses the whole time.
Yeah.
And it was not interesting at all.
Yeah.
And it wasn't done very well. I have to admit, my 3D experience has been, it's gone from Avatar, which was great, to Alice in Wonderland, which was reasonably good, okay, a little on cards. That's what you felt like. And then I saw Clash of the Titans which was, if everything came out like Clash of the Titans in 3D, we would be out of a business in 12 months.
There was an interesting story because one of the speakers on the summit did the effects work for Clash, and they met with people in England, and were from that date of the meeting, they had 8 weeks, and the picture wasn't even locked. So they had to produce the effects while the editors were still locking the picture. And, you know, I don't know how you do that, but they got through it.
And what happened was everyone saw money, right?
Yeah. You know, we've been evaluating some conversion technologies and so on. And the reason being is there are two very good cases for conversion. Obviously, back catalog. What are you going to do? We all want to go see Star Wars in 3D. We're not going to reshoot, right? So conversion has a home there. And then there's also certain types of movies, like we're working on a surfing picture. So obviously some of the underwater stuff's very easy to do, the above ground stuff. But the minute you want to stick a 3D rig on the back of a surfer to catch through a wave, that gets difficult. So you have to look at conversion. So we've been looking at different technologies and conversion samples and so on. And I made the mistake the other day of bringing some people in to look at the conversion samples to compare. But before that, they wanted to see the trailer of our movie Golden that we're making. So we looked at the trailer of Golden, which was shot with rigs.
Okay.
And we're shot with two cameras, a two-camera shoot. And then we looked at the conversion stuff, and we're like, that's 2D. I went back the next day and looked at it again fresh without having looked at the stereoscopically shot stuff, and I could now see the depth a little bit better. And that's where I come back to this issue of that where it's going to become more of an issue is a movie that gets converted is prefaced by high-quality shot commercials. And they're going to see the stereo really nicely done. Mm-hmm. Right now, they can get away with that. But soon, there'll be the contrast between the quality of content. And they won't be able to get away with it.
Well, and what was interesting for me is when I saw a lot of the examples of stuff that had been done where they'd cut and pasted. Because we've been doing that in layers for a long time. One of the things that I noticed was I put on these little Fuji. I took these. Fuji has this little 600, little stereoscopic camera, which I'm thinking of getting one, you know, because as we get into this, I want to have a little pocket camera that I can shoot stereo whenever I want. And I went to test it because I was like, oh, I don't know if this is really going to work. And when I put the glasses on, it was some of the best 3D I had seen. It just popped right out. And part of it is that it was easy. You could just take some video and then you could put it on and then you put your glasses on and it's perfectly registered. It looks right. It's great. And then I realized that it wasn't that 3D wasn't working. It was that everyone was doing it wrong. Whatever they were doing, it's not working. Now, Avatar did work because they were using rigs. And when people are building real rigs for this, that works. And we're starting to see now camera companies trying to make it a little easier on us. We saw that today this week we saw Panasonic put out a professional, what they call the professional HD. And you got to see
the 3D,
it?
Yeah, the AG 3D-A1, it's mm-hmm. called. Yeah. And this is a sweet, I think their Panasonic is really, really smart with this placement because it's a prosumer camera. Mm-hmm. It's going to be priced at $21,000.
Right.
And it's not coming out till the fall, but I think it's going to meet the needs of
Who does it meet the needs of? Because it's in this yeah. it's in a canyon uh-huh. halfway between a toy and a very and a big rig that really mm-hmm. does real work.
Right.
And that's the question is who uses a $21,000 camera with quarter inch chips?
Well, someone who doesn't really know how to control 3D. This camera has taken away the possibility of error for some of the things like vertical alignment and interocular. And these are all these terms that, mm-hmm. We could spend another hour talking about. But, because it has placed two cameras together inside an encasement, you can't change that. So it gives you a little bit more successful start out the gate mm-hmm. if you want to try to shoot something. Now, that doesn't answer your question of what's this footage going to end up being or doing. Right. And that's another question. But
Well, and there's a lot. I mean, I think there's some of the controversy is, with all of this is also where do you, how do you set up the 3D? Where is the focus point? That's one of the things that I was talking to someone down at ILM who really feels like you really want to make sure mm-hmm. it pops, and a lot of people are playing too conservative. If you play too conservative, people don't know whether 3D is worth it. If you get too aggressive, then people get headaches.
It's the balance between the gimmick shot and giving some real depth. I enjoyed the 3D and Avatar and so on. I just felt like those little the little jellyfish mm-hmm. dandelion thingies, uh-huh. that I felt like they could have been floating all around the audience. I thought that could have been brought out a whole lot more. And I
right.
respect not wanting to get gimmicky. But,
and everyone on the show on Avatar says that this was a very much a conservative approach yeah. to the use of 3D and that they wanted to draw you into the world. So, but yeah, I mean, it's like at what point do you...
Yeah.
But I've talked to a lot of script writers that they may have a script and say, oh, I want to shoot this in 3D. And when you talk to someone who really knows 3D, they ask the question, well, have you written this for 3D? There is this entire depth range and depth space that you have to envision. You have to write for that and put it in the script. And, they're even toying with the idea of putting in a little column, D1 or D-1 versus D5 and D-, where they envision this scene, how they envision the scene taking place. Is this character, in your face, in front of the space of the camera, or are they behind it?
And this, of course, gets into the whole question of conversion. The question is, okay, you've got a 3D movie, you want to make it in 3D, so are you going to shoot it for 3D, and then are you going to write for it in 3D, and so on? I think those things are all very important, and then, of course, that's one of the troubles with conversion. If it was just shot for 2D, and then you now go and convert, none of those considerations are taken.
Right.
Yeah, and the other thing is that there's a lot of people are asking, so some people say we should figure that out on set. We should point when we set up the lenses, we should set them up of where they're focusing to, like the eye would. Some people say you should just shoot it parallel and then we'll figure it out later. Do you have any, did anyone come to any conclusions on that?
I did not hear anybody at the show suggest that. I think they're thinking to, in fact, I heard several people say that the whole concept of fix it in post, not so good with 3D. Try not to rely on fixing it in post. Try to get it as close as the way you want it during the shoot, and then you can tweak in post, but don't just leave it up to post.
Yeah, there's another powerful argument for that, and that's live. I mean, if your whole technology is based on capture and fix, then that's not going to help you capturing live content at all.
Right.
And that then of course changes the entire video village downstream. I mean, that's the thing that I started seeing is I didn't really think about it when I was I didn't really think about it until I was walking around. But they have mixers that are now 3D, and I was like, oh, right.
Switch two cameras with one button.
Yeah. But I was great. I didn't think of that. Yeah. I didn't think that was going to be really an issue there.
And then, of course, graphics. Now, that's a big issue, you know, and some, you know, closed captioning and all of that is, you know, graphics have to come down, you know, in space on top of everything else, or it can get sort of, you know, covered up by the other layers.
Well, the other thing is that now you get into this weird thing when you start adding. So one of the things I was walking around the North Hall, and they've got all these distribution systems and graphic systems and Chiron systems. And one of the things that they had was a graphic system that's going to fly in all the information for a football game while you're watching a 3D football game. The problem is that the 3D setup for the graphics is in the same space as the football game. And so you see a guy running across the field, and there's a point where the logo spins in, and he feels like he should run into the logo. Mm-hmm. Or he should run through the logo, which would be kind of cool. but he should run, like, through the middle of the logo, like behind one thing but in
or
front
it
of another. That's what
he kicks it.
Because they set up, you know, because they're setting up in two separate worlds, but when you mesh them back together, the logos don't feel like they're in front. And so it almost seems like you're going to have to set up rules where you're going to somehow figure out how to push that stuff behind that logo or create a safe space in the foreground.
I think Eric has a point too with the whole live thing. I think, you know, really there's going to be two real different workflows that, you know, that progress based on whether it's live or if it's, you know, production of some kind.
The other thing, when you're talking about the scoring and little info boxes and so on, ironically, those will look really good on a 2D capture. You know, they'll actually bring out a lot of interactivity in the score and so on. And then how the 3D is shot at that point, you do want to be really careful so that you're not ending up with that conflict. We had some early initiatives in video game conversion and that kind of stuff. So we have Rock Band. You can come next time you're around, we'll spin it up.
Yeah.
But you've got Rock Band in there. Now, Rock Band wasn't created for 3D, but it converts extremely nicely. But because of the way it's set up, the band is in the background, everything's in the background, but the scoring things and so on sit very nicely in a plane separate from them.
Yeah.
And as long as they can achieve that in that live environment, I think it'll be pleasing. Otherwise, I think you're right. It just get cluttery.
Yeah, it was, and there's all these bandwidth issues too. I mean, when you really start looking at this, I mean, because we're also starting to push to 4K, you know, so people were talking about 4K projectors, and now we're talking about 4K projectors in stereo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's, you know, it really starts to turn into, you know, sooner or later, it really turns into real bandwidth.
Serious bandwidth.
Well, the one upside of that right now, mm-hmm. from a studio perspective, is that, you know, it's piracy. Let's start off right off the, you know, from a cinematic perspective, you're not going to walk in with your camcorder and steal a stereoscopic movie off the screen.
Well, no, but you have to bring in that Panasonic now.
Yeah, right.
And overlay a pair of glasses.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you could maybe squeeze. But you get what I'm, you know, so immediately that gives them a little bit of, you know, a little bit of content control beyond what they would have. They may not be able to control the 2D version, but they can control the 3D version for a time. And then that extra bandwidth. I mean, music was lost to digital download much more quickly than video because of the bandwidth issue. And so if 3D is going to require all that extra bandwidth, it'll give the studios and the producers a little bit for a while protection.
Well, and one of the big things
I think it's on YouTube 3D channel, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that also is part of that is that they're hoping to tie us into the theaters, although of course TV manufacturers want to tie us, get it into our back. Yeah. You know, and I want one. I have to admit. Do you guys have one? Do you have one at home?
Well, we have several.
You have several.
So, we have several. But here's the thing. I think the studios initially had that reaction. I think there was a no. We want to use 3D to tie it in, and that's that. But then here's the problem. Where's the DVD revenue now? I mean, Blockbuster stores are closing everywhere. The home rental business is dying a death. And all of a sudden, stereoscopic 3D home rental opens up a whole nother market chain. So I think
Blu-ray.
And here's the beauty is that anybody, I mean, look, if you go to any VFX fan, anybody who loves a big action movie with lots of visual effects in it, they still want to go see it on a big screen.
Right.
3D makes that even more significant. I don't care if you have a 3D TV at home. The edge violations and so on, even on a big flat screen monitor, are total. I mean, you go sit in the fifth row of your 3D cinema and you're immersed.
Right.
And so I think the studios will still have a lot of protection from that. I have 3D monitors. Even if they release this stuff to me, I would still go and watch it in the
and anything that it is. I think that that's a whole cinematic issue. I mean, in general, that you have to make a cinematic film to expect people to come to the theater.
Yeah.
The you have to really pay attention to that. It, like when I look at a romantic comedy, I'm like, I can watch that at home. You know, that's sure. a com, that, you know, that's a DVR or whatever. And it doesn't have to be, it can be a like, it can be a very, if it's going to be very visual, it doesn't have to have a lot of effects, but if it's going to be very visual, I do want to see it on a big screen.
But see, here's what's interesting about that. Now, Elise and I always have that. What movie are we going to go see? She'll say a movie and I'll go, ah, it's a home video, right? You have right. that same issue. It's a romantic comedy or what have you. But my view is that take a well-shot, well-written 4:3D mm-hmm. romantic comedy. That now that becomes a visual effects movie. Now that becomes something you want to go see on the big screen. Right. Now you may still want to watch it in 3D on your 3D TV, but the 3D will always 3D is always bigger on the larger screen. Mm-hmm. So I think that's good for the studios and good for the producers.
Now one of the things that comes up, and I'm sure that they must have talked about it a lot, is the distribution. I mean, so, mm-hmm. so it's bad enough that the theaters can't figure out what they want to do, but then you have TVs. Was there any?
This is the thing. There's three groups of people involved in this. The consumers, those of us are going to go watch it. The content providers, the studios right. and people, and then the manufacturers and those that are wanting everybody to buy that TV for their home are driving this. You know, they're the ones that are driving, and everybody is trying to rush. You know, because ESPN and Discovery all have their 3D channels coming out this mm-hmm. year, and they've got to put something in it. So,
and by the way, they're way out ahead all the time. Those are the two, mm-hmm. but especially Discovery Channel, they were shooting HD when no one outside of Japan was talking about
and
HD.
John Honeycutt, who is a VP there, spoke at the summit and mm-hmm. talked about their plan and that this has been part of their plan for a long time. And they are wanting to push an enormous amount of 3D through the pipeline. Right. And the question is, as Jeffrey Katzenberger identified, is that content going to be good enough to make us want more? You know, right. and from a lot of things, I don't know what you've seen yet, but I've seen a lot of things at the show that say, no, thanks.
This is
I want to see more of.
This is what's so important. And this is where that issue about like a converted movie should come with a disclaimer. If bad 3D is produced right now, people will walk in, make a judgment about 3D, and they will walk out.
And we just have to distinguish it. It's not even that you have to have a disclaimer for the bad 3D, but you do have to have a badge of true 3D.
Yeah.
You know, or and maybe it's
true
something
3D.
That,
TRU 3D.
Yeah, that's good.
Can you get the .com?
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, I did this live, and everyone knows it now. I couldn't keep it a secret for, you know, usually I can publish the show a little later.
Okay, come on.
You guys are
all going to stick with us on this, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. I've already got it. Don't even bother. I've already got it. No, actually, I came out of one of the
yeah, exactly.
One of the things at the 3D Summit and went and got the URL 3dglossary.com because it's like, okay, we really need a glossary that's online everybody can look things up in. So
there's a lot of that. And that's what we're going to be diving into with this with the show that we're talking about is we're going
to be
we're going to talk about the different pieces. We're going to be shooting a lot of it at Kerner. So we're going to, you know, the technical stuff we're going to be shooting. Then we'll shoot some stuff in LA with people doing it. We'll be shooting people doing it, and we'll be doing experiments up in Kerner and give people an opportunity to see all of that. And so, but it is, it's complex. And as I said, if you're a theater owner, how do you make a decision about what projectors? I mean, this is a big investment. This is what, $50,000 or $100,000 or more that you're going to spend on your projectors. How do you know which one to get now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough call. I know in our case, we've gone with a Dolby system in the George Lucas Theater, we are going with one. And I'm not technical enough to tell you why it is we went that way, but our president and that's what our team decided to go with. And how a full-on exhibitor who's using it for public display makes those decisions, you know, how much light's coming through, whether or not you have to silverize your screen. I think that was one of the issues for us, is that we use our screen for both 2 and 3D, and we didn't want to have to silverize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but these are big questions.
Right. And one of the topics of discussion at the summit was distribution and cinemas, and, you know, and we heard from people from Russia and Germany and all these different places. And one of the driving forces of opening new cinemas was 3D.
Right.
And that's still pushing, adding more cinemas or expanding or upgrading. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're being pushed from that direction too. So,
yeah there's, it's funny. I saw, a news piece just in the last 2-3 days here where somebody at Sony said they believed that 3D television was going to be
so it's going to save them,
next $10 billion business. It's the thing, you know, that they're all investing in. And that goes to the theaters as well. They're looking at that. Mm-hmm. If you look at, digital conversions just came to a grinding halt during all this mm-hmm. economic, you know, issue. But there were some screens that were still doing digital conversion, but only ones that were converting to 3D. So the only thing that kept digital conversion going was 3D mm-hmm. conversion.
Because mm-hmm. really all the 3D stuff being distributed is digital. I mean, it's not. I mean,
that's actually what, I mean, you know, according to Bernard Minnenborough, who wrote the book, 3D, picture mm-hmm. storytelling, and I'm sorry, I don't know the rest of the title. But anyway, it's like the only 3D book out right now, the right. more modern one. And this is sort of what, you know, what he's saying is.
It seems like it's unmanageable. I mean, we knew that yeah. as a distribution method, film was going to be out the door.
Yeah, well,
the
there are digital, people, you know.
That's why it's working now.
Yeah, but
it's digital.
But there are now. I mean, Technicolor's got a film solution. I know another group in New York that's got a film solution that's talked to us about distribution on it. And, you know, they've done away with a lot of the problems that plagued 3D the first time around, the waggle of the film. And, mm-hmm. and because you're now using a single strand of film, you're not having to align the two of them. So frankly, I'm a bigger fan of going the digital route. But in the meantime, you've got all these exhibitors out there that actually have projection systems. And there is a, you know, I wrote a blog the other day. It said the clash of the 3D screens. Because, of course, as Clash came out, all of a sudden you have, you know, not enough screens. So I think those solutions may be helpful, but only as a stopgap. And I think some people are concerned that it will serve to delay digital conversion, mm-hmm. which is, an issue as well.
Or if we see more avatars, if we see more stuff going, it could accelerate it, right? Because we could get rid of that. I mean, because it seems like shooting 3D is complicated enough. You start adding film to both acquisition and distribution, and it just turns it into a seemingly a very undoable.
But if you look at India, for example, and I can tell you, I've just come back from India, and I'm headed there again shortly.
And they're very committed to film.
They're very committed to film. And they have, you know, one of the issues is, and without getting into camera manufacturers here, but one of them has gone over there heavily with digital cameras, and the heat gets in and the camera stops. And so they're, you know, that's a big issue. So they're very committed in that sense. One of the reasons that we designed our rigs to take either film or digital cameras was to, you know, with that thinking that there were always going to be some people who wanted to stick with that medium for whatever reason, artistic or technical.
Now, does and we've gotten really through that. We were just talking about this, but registration really isn't a problem with the film, or
well, I mean, it's different. Clearly, you know, but I mean, you have different digital cameras. When we did some work with RED cameras recently, and mm-hmm. and of course with RED cameras, you know, getting the alignment stuff is different than it is if you're aligning. You know, so mm-hmm. every there's always going to be a quirkiness, and clearly it's going to be different between film and digital.
Right.
You know, we keep referring back to Avatar, and the thing about Avatar is that didn't it take 10 years? I mean, I think Cameron wrote the script like at least 12 years ago or something, and it took like some 10 years or something to actually bring it to the screen. And we're using that as the reference of what we want, which is totally unrealistic, you know, to expect new, 3D films coming out this year to look like Avatar. But you know, that's what we want. I don't know how that's going to work itself out. But
well, it does definitely seem like people need to start getting rigs and start shooting. I mean, you know.
Well, you see, now here's the funny thing. I love Pixar, one of my favorite film companies out there. I love their stories, love what they do. I have to say, though, that in 3D, it doesn't the benefit isn't as significant to me. Like watching mm-hmm. Up in 2D is much more colorful and bright and all that kind of stuff. And I think it still would have been a wildly successful movie in 2 or 3D. Where 3D to me is really magical is with live action. And the reason being is that remember that 3D is really just a trick of the brain. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're watching animation, your brain knows that it's not real. So the 3D isn't quite as convincing.
Right.
When you're watching even Avatar with so mm-hmm. much of the, you know, clearly animated or clearly CG stuff and also some photoreal CG stuff, even there, I think there are times where your brain goes, I know that blue person doesn't actually, you know, there's a little bit of that. Now, something shot purely live action and the scenes in Avatar that to me were most like where you really were like lost and looking into them when it was completely live action and you look and your brain goes, I accept that. That's reality.
Right.
I could
was
walk
it
in
for
there.
You? Was it in that world?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was a lot of CG combination.
But in the
too.
Rooms, though, in like when they're in the rooms in the conference, you know, when they first walk in and he wheels in the wheelchair, all mm-hmm. that stuff. It's so very, you know, we did a with our very first generation rig. David Arquette came and said, "Look, I'd like to shoot this." He'd seen some painting when he was out for dinner with Courtney, and he wanted to make a little 12-minute commercial called "The Butler's in Love." Silly little story, you know. But what's interesting is that it was entirely shot live action. There's no, it's not augmented. Very little, and almost very little correction in post. But and the story, there's really not much story. But what happens is you find yourself watching it because it's so pleasing to watch. You look at it and you go, I can look into this third room behind there and I can feel my focal muscles actually moving and changing, and your brain accepts it as real. And mm-hmm. I think that to a large degree, the whole, like you said, we're expecting to shoot at that level of Avatar. I think an extremely well-shot, non-gimmicky, live-action 3D movie shot on stable rigs, that's going to be pleasing to people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and do we, to make more things more complex, and this is opening up a whole other can of worms, is do we get to a point where we now, to make it really us accept it as real, do we start increasing the frame rate? I mean, so we're at 24 frames a second. 24 frames a second is the minimum that we could do where it worked. You know, that, I mean, that's how we got to 24 right. frames. Do we start going to 60 frames a second in stereo? Do we start going to, you know, is that going to make a difference in how we accept it? Does some of that shuttering that we see, is some of that a 24 frame issue, or is it something that would it look more real? And I think we'll see some of that when we play with the Panasonic camera, because the Panasonic camera, I believe, does 60p. Mm-hmm. You know, in stereo, it's capturing. Right.
I think so, too. And it may come back to, you know, the difference between sports and, you know, live action kinds of things, too, where sports currently is a higher frame rate, mm-hmm. you know, than dramatics. And it can capture that fast speed action. But one thing we're learning, or that, you know, some people shared, Steve Slayer of Threality Digital, and some other folks were talking about what not to do. And one of the things is, don't expect to edit 3D at the same pace. So, you know, if somebody had something really fast, you know, a show that was fast cut and they wanted to convert it to 3D, they would need to really rethink the speed that they were cutting and to slow them down, because cutting with depth, you know, causes your eyes to work harder and your brain to work harder to put it all together. And then yeah. you add some of the little, you know,
so this really changes a lot of the rules.
It does.
I didn't get to see the Masters in 3D, but what I heard was that the 3D itself was good, but that it didn't follow the game. You know, whoever's making the cutting decisions was, you know, oh God, those are some really good trees, and did they ever look good in 3D? And oh, but we're actually supposed to be on the 14th hole right now, and so right. there was a, you know, and this is the whole thing. Yeah. You got to know that when even in the switch from black and white to color, it changed a whole bunch of directorial issues. Like right. the year before, you go, God, that's a great sunset. Too bad we can't do anything with it. Wait a minute, we're in color now, and I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities like that with 3D yeah. as well.
Right. Right, and for people who are aggressive enough to write that stuff in, mm-hmm. and that's going to be, and we are in that in every technology, we're really in that situation where you know, everyone's going to be playing. I mean, when Photoshop came out and people started like learning what they could do to the photos, or when they suddenly had Illustrator and they could start really playing with all the text, and we had magazines like Raygun, which looked incredibly interesting to look at that you couldn't read. You couldn't actually read. You put it on your coffee table, you know, like, I get Reagan. You know, because I'm edgy. But and they were like, so what did you read it? That's what I used to always ask people if I saw Reagan back in the day. I was like, so which article did you like? Well, I'm still digging into it.
I enjoyed the font on page 6.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, and there's, you know, there's always going to be just a lot of bad art every time we get some new tool that we're trying mm-hmm. to, and we're just trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the issue is, I think the challenge is, I mean, I feel like in some ways Blu-ray and HD, you know, the HD DVD, you know, fell, I think that they're falling victim to the fact that it took them too long to figure out that format. You know, they didn't come to an agreement. They decided they wanted to fight over it. And by the time they got to the other end, digital distribution had, mm-hmm. you know, sunk in. Yeah. And they just never were able to capitalize on it.
Yeah. And Sony announced this morning, or I heard over the weekend as well, that the PlayStation 3 is going to be updated to be able to play 3D. And I yeah. think that's going to get updated this summer. Right. And, you know, Sony again is trying to push this whole from theater to your home kind of a thing. So Blu-ray may have another life as a 3D player, you know. And
right.
So. See what happens.
So this is the beginning.
This is.
It is.
It's an exciting.
You know, it'll be interesting. We're really seeing it all, and this is the start, and we're going to be starting a podcast. So we're going to be starting to do some interviews, and you'll see all of us talking about this on the show, and yeah. And we're going to start. I think we're going to start trying to do some audio like this. This is kind of a, while this is This Week in Media, I think eventually this is, we're going to have another kind of chat. We'll bring some other people in, and we'll have some conversations about 3D.
Yeah.
And if people have any questions, people haven't been asking a lot of questions here. I've been watching our, for those of you who are listening, we're streaming live, and so we've been watching to see if anyone is looking, or anyone, we have about 60 people watching us live. We didn't give them much warning. We just said, hey, we're on.
And watch now.
And, yeah, watch now. And so it was a little bit of an experiment for us. And anyway, but if you have questions, just save them up. We're going to start thinking about them, start writing them down. We'll start cutting into it. Mm-hmm. We're going to get up a site. We're going to put a site up, and we're going to start letting people send us some of those suggestions. And anyway, Eric, where should people find you on the web?
Well, I guess the easiest place is Kerner.com, KERNER.com. That's where our company is. And any of you are movie buffs, you'll see some great archival photographs and makeup work and special effects and so on. And yeah, that's where they can find me.
I every time I go to Kerner, someone asks, have you had a tour? And I always go, well, and then they go, oh, let me take you on a tour. So I've gotten like four tours in the last, it's always someone different. I take advantage of them.
It's a special place. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, Diana, where can people find you?
They can find me at Weinand.com, and that's WEYNAND.com.
This mess that you've been listening to is This Week in Media. We are over and out. We'll be right back.